Then the auction happened, and I found myself with even bigger problems. The auction is this bogus way that Booster Club raises money for the school. They insist it's an honor to be chosen, but bull stinking loney to that. Bottom line is, 20 guys get shanghaied. They have to come up with fancy picnic lunches and then be humiliated in front of the whole school while girls bid to have lunch with them. Guess who made this year's top 20? You'd think mothers would say, hey, there's no way you're going to auction my son off to the highest bidder. But no. Instead, they're all flattered that their son's been elected a basket boy. Yes, my friend, that's what they call you. Over the PA, you hear stuff like, there will be an organizational meeting of the newly elected basket boys in the MPR at lunch today. All basket boys must attend. Pretty soon, you've completely lost your name. You and 19 other saps are known simply as Basket Boy. My mom, of course, was into it, coming up with all sorts of stuff to put in my basket so I'd get the highest bid. I tried to explain that I didn't want to be in Mayfield Junior High's Basket Boy Hall of Fame, and that really, what was in the basket didn't matter. It wasn't like girls were bidding on the basket. When you got right down to it, this was a meat market. You eat lunch on campus, and that's the end of it. It is hardly a meat market, Bryce. It's an honor. Besides, maybe someone really nice will bid on you, and you'll make a new friend. Mothers can be in such denial. And then Garrett bends my ear with the news that Shelley Stalls is breaking up with Mitch Michelson, and that she, Miranda Humes, and Jenny Atkinson are starting some bidding war over me. Dude, he tells me. The two hottest chicks on campus. And I swear to God, man, Shelly's dumped Mitch because of you. I heard it direct from Shagreer, and dude, Shagreer the ear knows all. He throws me this nasty grin and says, me? I'm rooting for Jumbo Jenny. It would serve you right for being such a basket boy. I told him to shut up, but he was right. With the way my luck was running, I'd probably get stuck with Jumbo Jenny. I could just see it. 6 feet of beefy babe downing both halves of my lunch and then coming after me. Jenny's the only girl or guy on campus who can dunk a basketball. The whole gym shakes when she lands. And since she's got no, you know, female parabolas, the girl could shave her head and make it in the NBA. Seriously, no one would ever suspect. Her parents give her anything she wants, too. Rumor has it, they converted their garage into a full-on basketball court just for her. Which meant that in the game of the basket boys, I was as good as slam dunked. Unless Shelley or Miranda was high bidder. But how could I make sure that happened? My brain went into overdrive, constructing a plan, and in the end I decided that there was only one sensible course of action. Kiss up to both of them. Halfway through my first day of doing this, I felt like a skunk. Not that I was being gross about it or anything, I was just, you know, friendly. And even though Shelley and Miranda didn't seem to smell a thing, Garrett did. Dude, he says to me on Thursday, I can see your game, man. What are you talking about? Don't deny it, dude. You're working them both. He comes up and whispers in my ear, basket boy or not, I'm in awe. Shut up, man. Seriously, the ear says they were like clawing each other in PE today. I had to know. What about Jumbo Jenny? He shrugs. Haven't heard. But we'll find out tomorrow, won't we, dude? My mother dropped me off at school on Friday with my stupid, oversized picnic basket, and since all basket boys have to dress up, I was choking in a tie and feeling completely dweeb-like in slacks and dress shoes. Kids whistled and shouted, "Ooh, baby," as I headed up the walkway. And then Jumbo Jenny passed me, taking the front steps three at a time. Wow, Bryce, she said over her shoulder, you look delicious. Oh, man. I practically ran to the classroom where all the basket boys were supposed to meet, and the minute I walked in, I felt better. I was surrounded by other dweebs who seemed genuinely happy to see me. "Hey, Losky. Yo, dude. Doesn't this suck eggs? Why didn't you take the bus, man?" Misery loves company. Then Mrs. McClure, the president of the Boosters, the lady who lassoed us all, hoofs it through the door. "Oh my," she says, "you all look so handsome." Not one word about our baskets, not one little sneak peek inside. No, for all she cared, those puppies were empty. Meat market? You better believe it. "Don't be so nervous, boys," Mrs. McClure was saying. "You're going to have a wonderful day." She pulls out a list of names and starts ordering us into line. We get numbers, our baskets get numbers, we fill out 3x5 cards to her insane specifications, and by the time she's got us all organized and is sure we know what to do and what not to do, we've missed all of first and most of second period. "Okay, gentlemen," she says, "leave your baskets where they are and go to..." Where are we now? Still in second? She looks at the clock. Right, second.
"What about passes?"
some sensible basket boy asked.
"Your teachers have a list, but if they say anything, tell them I say your neckties are your passes. I'll meet you back here when everyone's dismissed for the auction. Got it? Don't dawdle."
We grumbled, "Yeah, yeah," and headed to class. And I can tell you this. Not one of the 20 of us listened to a word any of our teachers said that morning. How can you listen with a noose around your neck, pinched toes, and a room full of idiots thinking it's open season on basket boys? Whoever started this stupid tradition ought to be crammed into a basket and tossed downstream without a serving spoon. I was basket boy number 9, which meant I had to stand there on the stage in the gym while nearly half the guys got auctioned off. Minimum bid? $10. And if nobody bid, the secret was a teacher was assigned to bid on you. Yes, my friend, the possibilities for mortification were infinite. Some of the moms showed up and stood off to the side with their camcorders and zoom lenses, fidgeting and waving and basically acting as dweeby as their sons looked. I should know. My mom took an hour off work to be one of them. Tim Pello was basket boy number 5, and his mom actually bid on him. No kidding. She jumped up and down yelling, "20! I'll give you 20! Man, that'll brand you for life. Lucky for Tim, Kelly Trott came up with $22.50 and saved his sorry self from everlasting torture as a mama's boy, one of the few fates worse than basket boy. Caleb Hughes was up next, and he fetched the Boosters all of $11.50. Then came Chad Ormond, who I swear was ready to pee his pants when Mrs. McClure made him step forward. She read his card, pinched his cheeks, and raked in 15 even. At this point, what stood between me and the auction block was John Trulock, and I wasn't exactly interested in what he had in his basket or what his hobbies and favorite sports were. I was too busy scanning the crowd for Jumbo Jenny, sweating my pits off. Mrs. McClure calls into the microphone, "Do I hear 10? And it took me a minute to tune into the fact that no one said 10. No one said anything.
"Come on out there. The lunch is delicious. Strawberry tarts,
And Mrs. McClure goes back to reading off the 3x5 about John Trulock's lunch. Talk about embarrassing. This was worse than being a mama's boy. Worse than lunch with Jumbo Jenny. How'd he get voted basket boy if nobody wanted to have lunch with him? Then, off to the right of the crowd, I hear, 10.
10? Did I hear 10?
Mrs. McClure says with a fluttery smile.
12,
came a different voice from the same area. The first voice came back with,
15.
And all of a sudden, I recognized whose voice it was. Julie Baker's. I searched through the crowd and found her, hand waving in the air, that look all over her face.
16,
came the other voice. There was a pause,
But then Julie shoots back with, 18!
18! Cries Mrs. McClure, who looks like she's about to collapse from relief. She pauses, then says, 18 going once, 18 going twice, sold for $18.
To Julie? She was the last person I expected to bid on a lunch. Anybody's lunch.
John staggered back into line, and I knew I was supposed to step forward, but I couldn't budge. I felt like I'd been slugged in the stomach. Did Julie like John? Is that why she'd been so nice lately? Because she didn't care about me anymore? All my life she'd been there, waiting to be avoided, and now it was like I didn't even exist.
Step up, Bryce. Come on, don't be shy.
Mike Abenito shoved me a little and said, your turn for torture. Get up there. I felt like walking the plank. I just stood up front, sweating bullets, while the booster queen dissected my lunch and started running through my list of favorites. Before she's even finished, though, Shelley Stalls calls out, 10!
What's that? Says Mrs. McClure.
I'll give you 10.
Oh, she laughs as she puts down her notes. Well, I guess I hear 10.
20,
calls Miranda Humes from dead center.
25.
It's Shelley again. I'm looking around for Jumbo Jenny, praying she's gone home sick or something, while Shelley and Miranda go up by fives.
30. 35. 40.
Then I spot her. She's about 20 feet behind Miranda, cleaning her fingernails with her teeth.
45. 50. 52.
52, interrupts the booster queen. Well, this has been lively, and from the looks of this basket, well worth the
60. 62, calls Shelley.
Miranda scrambles around trying to beg money off her friends as Mrs. McClure calls, going once, but then Jenny stands up and bellows,
100.
100. There's a collective gasp, and then the entire student body turns and stares at Jenny.
Well, laughs Mrs. McClure, we have 100. That is certainly an all-time record and such a generous donation to the boosters.
I wanted to boost her right off the stage. I was doomed. This was something I would never live down. Then there's this big commotion, and all of a sudden, Shelley and Miranda are standing right next to each other calling,
122.50! We'll give you 122.50! $122.50?
I thought the booster queen was gonna poke.
You're pooling your resources to have lunch with this fine young man?
Yeah,
they call. Then look over Jenny's way. Everybody looks over Jenny's way. Jenny just shrugs and goes back to cleaning a nail.
Well then, $122.50 going once, $122.50 going twice, sold to those two beautiful young ladies for an all-time record of $122.50.
Dude, Mike whispered when I got back in line. Shelley and Miranda? How am I supposed to follow that? He didn't even come close. He got Terry Norris for $16, and the most anyone else got was 40. And when it was over, all the guys told me, dude, you are like the man. Score! But I didn't feel like the man. I felt wiped out. My mom came up and gave me a hug and a kiss, like I'd won a gold medal or something, then whispered,
my little baby,
and clickety-clicked off in her high heels back to work. So I was wiped out, embarrassed, and then practically dragged to the multipurpose room by Shelley and Miranda. The boosters had outfitted the MPR with little tables for two, all decorated in shades of pink and blue and yellow, with balloons and streamers everywhere. I felt like the Easter Bunny with my stupid basket boy lunch clutched in both hands while Miranda held on to one arm and Shelley latched onto the other. They gave us the biggest table and whisked in an extra chair, and when everyone was seated, Mrs. McClure said, "Boys and girls, I don't think I need to remind you that you are excused from class for the rest of the day. Enjoy your lunches, enjoy your friendships, take your time, relax, and thanks again for supporting your boosters. We wouldn't be us without you." So there I was, with the two hottest girls on campus, having lunch. I was the man, the envy of every other guy in school. Buddy, I was miserable. I mean, these two girls may be gorgeous, but what was coming out of their mouths about Jumbo Jenny was embarrassingly ugly. Miranda works herself up to, "What was she thinking, like you would ever want to go out with her, right, Bryce?" Well, yeah, that was right, but it seemed really wrong to say so. "Look, can we talk about something else?" "Sure, like what?" "I don't care, anything else. You guys going anywhere this summer?" Miranda shoots off first. "We're taking a cruise to the Mexican Riviera. We're supposed to stop in all these cool ports and shop and stuff." She flutters her eyelids at me and says, "I could bring you something back." Shelley scoots her chair in a little and says, "We're going up to the lake. My dad has a cabin there, and you can get the most outrageous tan. Do you remember what I looked like at the beginning of this year? I was like black. I'm going to do that again. Only this time, I've got a schedule all worked out so that it's even everywhere." She giggles and says, "Don't tell my mom, okay? She would have a knip." And this, my friend, is how the tan wars began. Miranda told Shelley that she didn't even notice her tan at the beginning of the year, and that the place to really roast is on a cruise ship. Shelley told Miranda that anyone with freckles can't really get tan, and since Miranda had freckles everywhere, the cruise was a guaranteed waste of money. I choked down my third of the lunch and looked around the room, trying to let it all flow past me. Then I saw Julie. She was two tables away from me, facing my direction, only she wasn't looking at me. She was looking at John, her eyes all sparkly and laughing. My heart lurched. What was she laughing about? What were they talking about? How could she sit there and look so beautiful? I felt myself spinning out of control. It was weird, like I couldn't even steer my own body. I'd always thought John was pretty cool, but right then I wanted to go over and throw him across the room. Shelley grabbed my arm and said, "Bryce, are you all right? You look, I don't know, possessed or something." "What? Oh," I tried taking a deep breath. "What are you staring at?" Miranda asked. They both looked over their shoulders, then shrugged and went back to picking at their food. But I couldn't stop myself from looking again. And in the back of my mind, I could hear my grandfather's voice saying, "The choices you make now will affect you for the rest of your life. Do the right thing. Do the right thing. Do the right thing." Miranda shook me out of it, asking, "Bryce, are you in there? I asked, what are you going to do this summer?" "I don't know," I snapped. "Hey, maybe you can spend some time up at the lake with us," Shelley said. It was torture. I wanted to scream, "Shut up! Leave me alone!" I wanted to run out of the building and keep on running until I didn't feel like this anymore. "Lunch is really delicious, Bryce," Miranda's voice was floating around. "Bryce, did you hear me? This is really a spectacular lunch." A simple little thank you would have sufficed, but could I come up with a simple little thank you? No. I turned on her and said, "Can we not talk about food or tans or hair?" She gave me an uppity little smile. "Well, what do you want to talk about then?" I blinked at her, then at Shelley. "How about perpetual motion? Know anything about that?"
"Perpetual what?" Miranda starts laughing.
"What?" I asked her. "What's so funny?" She looks at me a minute, then snickers.
I didn't realize I'd bid on an intellectual.
Hey, I'm plenty smart.
Yeah, Miranda giggles. Can you spell intellectual?
He is too smart, Miranda.
Oh, stop kissing up, Shelley. You're trying to tell me you're after his brain? God, it's making me sick to watch you grovel.
Grovel? Excuse me?
You heard me. He's not going to take you to the grad dance anyway, so just give it up, why don't you? And with that, it was all over. One of my mom's flaky apple tarts got ground into Miranda's hair. The extra ranch dressing got smeared into Shelley's. And before Mrs. McClure could say, "In the name of boosters, what are you doing?" they were rolling on the floor, scratching each other's makeup off. I took this opportunity to leave my table and head for Julie's. I grabbed her by the hand and said, "I've got to talk to you." She sort of half stands and says,
"What? What's going on, Bryce? Why are they fighting?"
"Excuse us a minute, would you, John?" I pull her away from the table, but there's no place to go. And I've got her hand in mine, and I just can't think. So I stop, right there in the middle of the room, and look at her. At that face. I want to touch her cheek and see what it feels like. I want to touch her hair. It looks so incredibly soft.
"Bryce," she whispers, "what's wrong?"
I can barely breathe as I ask her, "Do you like him?"
"Do I? You mean John?"
"Yes."
"Well, sure. He's nice and..."
"No, do you like him?" My heart was pounding through my chest as I took her other hand and waited.
"Well, no. I mean, not like that."
"No." She said no. I didn't care where I was. I didn't care who saw. I wanted, just had to kiss her. I leaned in, closed my eyes, and then she broke away from me. Suddenly, the room was dead quiet. Miranda and Shelley stared at me through their slimy hair. Everyone was looking at me like I'd blown my entire circuit board, and I just stood there, trying to reel in my lips and pull myself back together. Mrs. McClure took me by the shoulders, guided me to my chair, and told me, "You sit here and you stay here." Then she hauled Miranda and Shelley outside, scolding them and telling them to find separate bathrooms and clean up while she ran down the janitor to mop up their mess. I sat there, by myself, and didn't even care about covering up. I just wanted to be with her, to talk to her, to hold her hand again, to kiss her. Before school was out, I tried to talk to her again, but every time I got close, she'd dodge me. And then when the final bell rang, she disappeared. I looked everywhere for her, but she was just gone. Garrett, however, wasn't. He tracked me down and said, "Dude, tell me it isn't true." I didn't say a word. I just headed for the bike racks, still hoping to find Julie.
"Oh, man, it is true."
"Leave me alone, Garrett.
You get hooked up with the two finest chicks on campus, then bail on them for Julie?"
"You don't understand."
"You're right, dude. I completely don't understand. Did you seriously try to kiss her?" "I couldn't believe that part. We're talking Juliana Baker, your nightmare neighbor, the know-it-all nuisance, the coop poop babe."
I stopped cold and shoved him, just laid into him with both hands and shoved. "That was a long time ago, man. Knock it off." Garrett put both hands up, but moved in at me. "Dude, you have flipped. You know that? Just back off, would you?" He blocked my path. "I can't believe this. 2 hours ago, you were the man. The man. The whole school was on their knees before you. Now look at you. You're like a social hazard." He snorted and said, "And dude, the truth is, if you're gonna be like this, I don't need the association." I got right in his face and said, "Good, 'cause you know what? Neither do I." I shoved him aside and ran. I wound up walking home, in my pinchy shoes, with dirty dishes clinking inside my sticky picnic hamper. This basket boy hiked all the way home. And there was a battle raging inside me. The old Bryce wanted to go back in time, wanted to hang with Garrett and shoot the breeze, wanted to hate Julie Baker again, wanted to be the man. But in my heart, I knew the old Bryce was toast. There was no going back, not to Garrett or Shelley or Miranda or any of the other people who wouldn't understand. Julie was different, but after all these years, that didn't bother me anymore. I liked it. I liked her. And every time I saw her, she seemed more beautiful. She just seemed to glow. I'm not talking like a 100-watt bulb. She just had this warmth to her. Maybe it came from climbing that tree. Maybe it came from singing to chickens. Maybe it came from whacking at 2x4s and dreaming about perpetual motion. I don't know. All I know is that compared to her, Shelley and Miranda seemed so ordinary. I'd never felt like this before, ever. And just admitting it to myself instead of hiding from it made me feel strong, happy. I took off my shoes and socks and stuffed them in the basket. My tie whipped over my shoulder as I ran home barefoot, and I realized that Garrett was right about one thing. I had flipped. Completely. I trucked down our street and spotted her bike lying on its side on the driveway. She was home. I rang the bell until I thought it would break. No answer. I pounded on her door. No answer. I went home and called on the phone, and finally, finally, her mother answers. Bryce? No, I'm sorry. She doesn't want to talk. Then she whispers, give her a little time, won't you? I gave her an hour. Almost. Then I went across the street. Please, Mrs. Baker, I've got to see her. She's locked herself in her room, dear. Why don't you try phoning tomorrow? Tomorrow? I couldn't wait until tomorrow. So I went around the side of their house, climbed the fence, and knocked on her window. Julie! Julie, please, I've got to see you. Her curtains didn't open, but the back door did, and out came Mrs. Baker to shoo me away. When I got home, my granddad was waiting at the front door. Bryce, what is going on? You've been running back and forth to the Bakers, climbing over their fence. You're acting like the world's on fire. I blurted, I can't believe this. I just can't believe this. She won't talk to me. He led me into the front room, saying, who won't talk to you? Julie. He hesitated. Is she mad at you?
I don't know.
Does she have reason to be mad at you?
No. Yes. I mean, I don't know.
Well, what happened?
I tried to kiss her in front of this whole room of people while I was supposed to be having that stupid basket boy lunch with Shelley and Miranda. I tried to kiss her.
Slowly, a smile spread across his face. You did?
I was like possessed. I couldn't stop myself, but she pulled away and...
I looked out the window at the Baker's house.
And now she won't talk to me.
Very quietly, my grandfather said, maybe she thinks this is all a little sudden.
But it's not.
It's not?
No, I mean...
I turned to him.
It started with that stupid newspaper article. And I don't know. I've been weirded out ever since. She doesn't look the same. She doesn't sound the same. She doesn't even seem like the same person to me.
I stared out the window at the Bakers.
She's just different.
My grandfather stood beside me and looked across the street too. No, Bryce, he said softly. She's the same as she's always been. You're the one who's changed. He clapped his hand on my shoulder and whispered, and son, from here on out, you'll never be the same again. Maybe my grandfather's happy about all this, but I'm miserable. I can't eat, I can't watch TV, I can't seem to do anything. So I went to bed early, but I can't sleep. I've watched her house from my window for hours now. I've stared at the sky, I've counted sheep, but man, I can't stop kicking myself for what an idiot I've been all these years. And now how am I going to make her listen to me? I'd scale that monster sycamore if I could, right to the top, and I'd yell her name across the rooftops for the whole world to hear. And since you know what a tree-climbing weenie I am, I think it's pretty clear that I'm willing to do anything to get her to talk to me. Man, I'll dive after her into a chicken coop full of poop if that's what it takes. I'll ride my bike all the stinking way to school for the rest of eternity if it means being with her. Something. I've got to come up with something to show her that I've changed. To prove to her that I understand. But what? How do I show her that I'm not the guy she thinks I am? How do I erase everything I've done and start over? Maybe I can't. Maybe it just cannot be done. But if I've learned one thing from Julie Baker, it's that I've got to put my whole heart and soul into it and try. Whatever happens, I know that my grandfather's right about one thing. I'll never be the same again.
The Basket Boys. The Monday after the Loskys' dinner party, Darla tracked me down at school and forced Bryce Losky back into my brain. Jules, whoa girl, wait up. How have you been? I'm fine, Darla, how are you? No, seriously, she whispered. Are you doing okay? She shifted her backpack and looked over each shoulder. I got to thinking, you know, that was just so cold of Bryce, especially since you've got that soft spot for him. Who told you that? Like I haven't got eyes? Come on, girl. It's a given. Which is why I got to worrying about you. Are you seriously all right? Yes, I am. But thanks for thinking about me. I eyed her and said, and Arla, it's not a given anymore. She laughed. How long's this diet gonna last? It's not a diet. I've just, lost my taste for him. She looked at me skeptically. Uh-huh. Well, I have, but thanks for, you know, caring. All through first period, I was still feeling strong and right and certain. But then Mrs. Simmons ended the lesson a full 15 minutes early and said, clear your desks of everything but a pen or pencil. What? Everyone cried. And believe me, I was right along with them. I was not prepared for a quiz. Everything, she said. Come on, you're wasting valuable time. The room filled with grumbles and the sound of shuffling binders. And when we'd all pretty much complied with her request, she picked a stack of bright yellow papers off her desk, fanned them with an evil grin, and said, it's time to vote for Basket Boys. A wave of relief swept across the room. Basket Boys? You mean it's not a quiz? She ticked through the stack, counting ballots as she spoke. It is like a quiz in that I don't want you conferring with one another. It's also like a quiz in that you have a limited amount of time. She slapped a set of ballots down on the first desk of row one, then went on to the second row. I will collect them from you individually when the bell rings, and I will inspect to see that you have complied with the following instructions. She scooted over to row three. Choose five and only five of the boys on the list. Do not put your name on it, and do not discuss your choices with your neighbors. She was on to row four now, talking faster and faster. When you've made your selections, simply turn your sheet over. She slapped the remainder down on the last desk. Do not, I repeat, do not fold your ballot. Robbie Castanon raised his hand and blurted out, why do guys have to vote? It's lame to have guys vote.
Robbie?
Mrs. Simmons warned. Seriously, what are we supposed to do, vote for our friends or our enemies? A lot of people snickered, and Mrs. Simmons scowled, but he had a point. 20 of the school's eighth-grade boys would be made to pack a picnic lunch for two and be auctioned off to the highest bidder. Being a basket boy is an honor, Mrs. Simmons began, but she was interrupted by Robbie. It's a joke, he said. It's embarrassing. Who wants to be a basket boy? All the guys around him muttered, not me. But Mrs. Simmons cleared her throat and said, you should want to be one. It's a tradition that has helped support the school since it was founded. There have been generation after generation of basket boys helping make this campus what it is today. It's why we have flower beds. It's why we have shade trees and a grove of apple trees. Visit another junior high sometime, and you'll begin to realize what a little oasis our campus really is.
All this from the sweat and blood of basket boys,
Robbie grumbled. Mrs. Simmons sighed.
Robbie, someday when your children go to school here, you'll understand. For now, please just vote for whoever you think will earn a high bid. And class, she added, we're down to 9 minutes.
The room fell quiet. And as I read down the list of over 150 eighth grade boys, I realized that to me, there had only ever been one boy. To me, there had only been Bryce. I didn't let myself get sentimental. I had liked him for all the wrong reasons, and I certainly wasn't going to vote for him now. But I didn't know who else to vote for. I looked at Mrs. Simmons, who was eagle-eyeing the class between glances at the clock. What if I didn't choose anybody? What if I just turned it in blank? She'd give me detention, that's what. So, with 2 minutes left to go, I put dots next to the boys I knew who weren't jerks or clowns, but were just nice. When I was through, there were all of 10 names with dots, and of those, I circled 5. Ryan Knoll, Vince Olson, Adrian Iglesias, Ian Lai, and John Trulock. They wouldn't make basket boy, but then I wouldn't be bidding, so it didn't really matter. At the bell, I handed over my ballot and forgot all about the auction. Until lunchtime the next day, that is. Darla cut me off on my way to the library and dragged me over to her table instead.
Have you seen the list? She asked.
What list?
The list of basket boys.
She shoved a scrawled copy of 20 names in front of me and looked around.
Your main dish is on it.
5 from the top. There it was. Bryce Losky. I should have expected it, but still, this awful surge of possessiveness shot through me. Who had voted for him? Out of 150 names, he must have gotten a lot of votes. Suddenly, I was picturing a swarm of girls waving stacks of cash in the booster ladies' faces as they begged to have lunch with him. I threw the list back at Darla and said, "He's not my main dish. As a matter of fact, I didn't even vote for him."
Ooh, girl, you are sticking to your diet.
It's not a diet, Darla. I'm over him, okay?
I'm glad to hear it, because rumor is that bimbette Shelly is already staking her claim on him.
Shelly? Shelly Stalls? I could feel my cheeks flush.
That's right.
Darla waved her list in the air, calling,
Liz, Macy, over here. I've got the list.
Darla's friends fell all over themselves getting to her, then poured over the paper like it was a treasure map. Macy cried,
Chad Ormond's in it. He's so cute. I'd go $10 on him easy.
And Denny's on it too, Liz squealed.
That boy is,
she shivered and giggled,
fine.
Macy's top lip curled a little and she said, John Trulock. John Trulock? How did he get on this list? For a moment, I couldn't believe my ears. I snatched the paper out of Macy's hand,
Are you sure? Right there, she said, pointing to his name. Who do you suppose voted for him? The quiet girls, I guess, Darla said. Me? I'm more interested in Mike Abanito. Have I got any competition? Macy laughed. If you're in, I'm out. Me too, said Liz. How about you, Jules? Darla asked me. Bring in spare change on Friday. No. You get to miss the second half of school. No, I'm not bidding. Not on anyone. She laughed. Good for you. That afternoon, I rode home from school brooding about Bryce and the whole basket boy auction. I could feel myself backsliding about Bryce. But why should I care if Shelley liked him? I shouldn't even be thinking about him. When I wasn't thinking about Bryce, I was worrying about poor John Trulock. He was quiet, and I felt sorry for him, having to clutch a basket and be auctioned off in front of the whole student body. What had I done to him? But as I bounced up our drive, basket boys bounced right out of my mind. Was that green I saw poking out of the dirt? Yes, yes, it was. I dropped the bike and got down on my hands and knees. They were so thin, so small, so far apart. They barely made a difference in the vastness of the black dirt. And yet there they were, pushing their way through to the afternoon sun. I ran in the house calling, Mom! Mom, there's grass! Really? She emerged from the bathroom with her cleaning gloves and a pail. I was wondering if it was ever going to spring up. Well, it has. Come and see. She wasn't too impressed at first, but after I made her get down on her hands and knees and really look, she smiled and said, They're so delicate. They look like they're yawning, don't they? She cocked her head a bit and looked a little closer. Yawning? Well, more stretching, I guess. Like they're sitting up in their little bed of dirt with their arms stretched way high saying, Good morning, world. She laughed and said, Yes, they do. I got up and uncoiled the hose. I think they need a wake-up shower, don't you? My mom agreed and left me to my singing and sprinkling. And I was completely lost in the joy of my little green blades of new life when I heard the school bus rumble to a stop up on Collier Street. Bryce. His name shot through my brain, and with it came a panic I didn't seem able to control. Before I could stop myself, I dropped the hose and dashed inside. I locked myself in my room and tried to do my homework. Where was my peace? Where was my resolve? Where was my sanity? Had they left me because Shelley Stalls was after him? Was it just some old rivalry making me feel this way? I had to get past Bryce and Shelley. They deserved each other. Let them have each other. But in my heart, I knew that just like the new grass, I wasn't strong enough yet to be walked on. And until I was, there was only one solution. I had to stay away from him. I needed to rope him out of my life. So I closed my ears to the news of basket boys and steered clear of Bryce at school. And when I did happen to run into him, I simply said hello like he was someone I barely even knew. It was working, too. I was growing stronger by the day. Who cared about auctions and basket boys? I didn't. Friday morning, I got up early, collected what few eggs there were in the coop, watered the front yard, which was by now definitely green, ate breakfast, and got ready for school. But as I was running a brush through my hair, I couldn't help thinking about Shelley Stalls. It was auction day. She'd probably been up since 5, making her hair into some impossibly poofy do. So what? I told myself. So what? But as I was throwing on my windbreaker, I eyed my money tin and hesitated. What if... No, 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 no. I ran to the garage, got my bike, and pushed out of the driveway. And I was in the street and on my way when Mrs. Stubbe flew right in my path. Juliana, she called, waving her hand through the air. Here, dear, take this. I'm so sorry it's taken me this long to get it to you. I keep missing you in the mornings. I didn't even know how much she owed me. At that moment, I didn't care. All I knew was the top bill in her hand was a 10, and it was striking terror in my heart. Mrs. Stubbe, please, I don't want that. You don't have to pay me.
Nonsense, child. Of course I'm going to pay you. Here,
she said, and waved it out for me to take. No, really, I don't want it. She wedged it in the pocket of my jeans and said,
What utter nonsense. Now go. Go buy yourself a rooster.
Then hurried back up her walkway. Mrs. Stubbe! Mrs. Stubbe! I called after her. I don't want a rooster! But she was gone. All the way to school, Mrs. Stubbe's money was burning a hole in my pocket and another in my brain. How much was it? When I got to school, I parked my bike, then broke down and looked. 10, 15, 16, 17, 18. I folded the bills together and slid them back into my pocket. Was it more than Shelley had? All through first period, I was furious with myself for even thinking it. All through second period, I kept my eyes off of Bryce, but oh, it was so hard. I'd never seen him in a tie and cufflinks before. Then at break, I was at my locker when Shelley Stalls appeared out of nowhere. She got right next to me and said, I hear you're planning to bid on him. What? I took a step back. Who told you that? I am not. Someone said they saw you with a whole wad of cash this morning. How much do you have? It's none of your business, and I'm not bidding, okay? I don't even like him anymore. She laughed. Oh, that'll be the day. It's true. I slammed my locker closed. Go ahead and waste your money on him. I don't care. I left her there with her mouth open, which felt even better than getting her in a headlock. That feeling carried me clear through to 11 o'clock, when the entire student body assembled in the gymnasium. I was not going to bid on Bryce Lasky. No way. Then the basket boys came out on the stage. Bryce looked so adorable holding a picnic basket with red and white checked napkins peeking out from either side, and the thought of Shelley Stalls flipping one of those napkins into her lap nearly made the bills in my pocket burst into flames. Darla came up behind me and whispered, Rumor is you've got a wad of cash. Is that true? What? No. I mean, yes, but I'm not bidding. Ooh, girl, look at you. You feeling all right? I wasn't. I felt sick to my stomach and shaky in the knees. I'm fine, I told her. Fine. She looked from me to the stage and back to me. You got nothing to lose but your self-respect. Stop it, I whispered at her fiercely. It felt like I was having a panic attack. I couldn't breathe. I felt lightheaded and wobbly, like I wasn't in control of my own body. Darla said, Maybe you should sit down. I'm fine, Darla. I'm fine. She frowned at me. I think I'll stick around to make sure. The Booster Club president, Mrs. McClure, had been fluttering around the basket boys, fixing ties and giving them last-minute instructions. But now, suddenly, she was slamming her gavel on the podium, calling into the microphone, If you'll all settle down, we're ready to begin. I'd never seen 600 kids quiet down so fast. I guess Mrs. McClure hadn't either, because she smiled and said, Why, thank you. Thank you very much. Then she said, And welcome to the 52nd annual basket boy auction. I know that your teachers have gone over the procedures with you in homeroom, but I've been asked to remind you of a few things. This is a civilized proceeding. No whistling, catcalls, or other degrading behavior will be tolerated. If you wish to place a bid, you must raise your hand high. Bidding without raising your hand is prohibited. And should you decide to be a funny guy, you will be caught and detained or suspended. Are we all clear on that?
Good.
She looked from one side of the gym to the other.
Teachers, I see that you are in position.
600 heads turned slowly from side to side, looking at the blockade of teachers on either side of the gym.
Man, Darla whispered, they're not leaving much room for fun, are they?
Mrs. McClure continued.
Minimum bid is $10. And of course, the sky's the limit, but we don't accept IOUs.
She pointed to her right.
Winning bidders should go directly to the table at the north door when I declare the basket to be sold. And as you're aware, winners and their basket boys have the rest of the school day off and are exempt from tonight's homework in all classes.
She smiled out at the blockade.
Teachers, we appreciate your support on this. All right, then.
She put on her reading glasses and looked at a 3x5 card.
Our first basket has been brought by Jeffrey Bichot.
She looked over her glasses at him and said,
Come on up, Jeffrey, don't be shy.
He inched forward as she continued.
Jeffrey has brought a scrumptious lunch consisting of chicken salad sandwiches, oriental noodles, baby grapes, iced tea, and fortune cookies.
She smiled at him over her glasses.
Sounds delicious and sounds like fun.
Which, she said, looking back at the crowd,
Jeffrey is. He enjoys skateboarding, skiing, and swimming. But ladies, he also enjoys a day in the park and watching Humphrey Bogart movies.
She turned to him and grinned.
They are a kick, aren't they?
Poor Jeff tried to smile, but you could tell he wanted to die.
All right, then,
said Mrs. McClure as she whipped off her glasses.
Do I hear 10?
Not only did she hear 10, she heard 12, 15, 20, and 25, too.
Going, going, gone,
cried Mrs. McClure.
To the young lady in the purple tunic.
Who is that? I asked Darla. I think her name's Tiffany, she said. She's a 7th grader.
Really? Wow, I would never have bid last year. And I don't remember bids going up that high either.
Darla eyed me. Which tells me that maybe you would bid this year. How much you got? I looked at her and almost dissolved right on the spot.
Darla, I didn't bring money on purpose. My neighbor made me take it on the way to school because she owed it to me for eggs and...
For eggs? Oh, like Bryce was talking about in the library?
Exactly. And
I looked at her looking at me and stopped cold.
How can you even think about bidding on that boy?
I don't want to, but I've liked him for so long. Darla, I've liked him since I was 7. And even though I know he's a coward and a sneak and I should never speak to him again, I'm having trouble focusing on that. Especially since Shelley Stalls is after him. And now I've got this money burning a hole in my pocket.
Well, I can understand the bit about Shelley Stalls. But if you know that boy's just a big piece of fluffy cheesecake that you're gonna regret eating, I can help you with your diet.
She put out her hand.
Give me the money. I'll hold it for you.
No.
No?
I mean, I can handle this. I've got to handle it.
She shook her head. Oh, girl, I'm hurting for you here.
I looked back at the stage. The auction was happening so fast. They'd be at Bryce in no time. As the bidding continued, the battle in my head got louder and fiercer. What was I going to do? Then, suddenly, the gym fell quiet. You could have heard a pin drop. And standing next to Mrs. McClure, looking completely mortified, was John Trulock. Mrs. McClure was scouring the crowd with her eyes, looking very uncomfortable, too.
What happened? I whispered to Darla.
No one's bidding, she whispered back.
Do I hear 10?
Called Mrs. McClure.
Come on out there. This lunch is delicious. Strawberry tarts, roast beef, and Munster cheese sandwiches.
Oh, no, I whispered to Darla. I can't believe I did this to him.
You? What did you do?
I voted for him. Well, you couldn't have been the only one. But why isn't anyone bidding on him? He's so nice. Darla nodded. Exactly. That's when I realized what I had to do. My hand shot into the air and I called, 10. 10? Warbled Mrs. McClure. Did I hear 10? I put my hand up higher and said to Darla, say 12. What? Say 12. I'll outbid you. No way. Darla, he can't go for 10. Come on. 12, Darla called, but her hand didn't go up very high. 15, I cried. 16, called Darla, and eyed me with a laugh. I whispered, Darla, I've only got 15. Her eyes got enormous. I laughed and called, 18, then held her arm down and said, but that really is all I've got. There was a moment of silence, and then, 18 going once, 18 going twice, sold for $18. Darla laughed and said, whoa, girl, what a rush. I nodded. Yes, it was. Well, no dessert for you. Looks like you got cleaned out by something a little more, nutritious. She nodded toward the stage. You gonna go up to the table like you're supposed to? Or are you gonna stick around and see the carnage? I almost didn't have a choice. Before Mrs. McClure could say two words about Bryce or his basket, Shelley called, 10! Then from the middle of the gym came, 20! It was Miranda Humes, with her hand way in the air. They went back and forth, higher and higher, until Shelley called, 62! I can't believe it, I whispered to Darla. $62? Come on, Miranda, come on! I think she's out. Shelley's got it. $62 going once? Cried Mrs. McClure. But before she could say going twice, a voice from the back of the gym called, 100. Everyone gasped and turned around to see who had called the bid. Darla whispered, it's Jenny. Atkinson? I asked. Darla pointed, right over there. She was easy to spot, standing tall above the others in the number 7 basketball jersey she almost always wore. Wow, I whispered. I had no idea. Maybe she'll slam dunk him for you, Darla said with a grin. Who cares? I giggled. She slam dunked Shelley. Mrs. McClure was gushing into the microphone about the record-breaking bid when a big commotion broke out over by Miranda. I spotted Shelley's hair, and my first thought was that there was going to be a fight. But instead, Shelley and Miranda turned to face Mrs. McClure and called, $122.50. I choked down a cry. What? They're teaming up, Darla whispered. Oh, no, no, no. I looked over Jenny's way. Come on, Jenny. Darla shook her head and said, she's through. And she was. Bryce went to Shelley and Miranda for $122.50. It was a little strange, meeting up with John and walking over to the multipurpose room for lunch. But he was just so nice, and I think grateful that I'd bid, that by the time we got situated at our table, I wasn't feeling so awkward or silly. It was just lunch. Things would have been easier if they hadn't seated me in direct view of Bryce and his little harem. But I did my best to ignore them. John told me all about this radio-controlled airplane that he and his dad were building from scratch, and how he'd been working on it for nearly 3 months, and that over the weekend, they were finally going to get to try it out. He told me a funny story about soldering the wires wrong, and practically starting a fire in their basement. And I asked him about how a radio-controlled airplane works because I didn't really understand it. So I'd relaxed a lot and was actually having a good time eating lunch with John. And I was so relieved that I hadn't bid on Bryce. What a fool I would have made of myself. Watching Shelley and Miranda fawning all over him didn't bother me nearly as much as I thought it would. Really, they looked ridiculous. John asked about my family, so I was telling him about my brothers and their band when a huge commotion broke out over at Bryce's table. Suddenly, Shelley and Miranda were rolling on the floor.